It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I am Dave Richmond. Another exciting episode, and this week, a little bit different. We have one of my really good friends from UNCTV restaurant reviewer, Bob Garner. And a lot of people think he has the best job in all of broadcasting, and you'll find out why. We're going to talk about sports, tailgating, a whole bunch of stuff. He's a really good friend, and we'll talk about life, too. A lot of great stories about his broadcasting career, and let's go to that interview right now. You're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to have one of my good friends on. UNCTV personality, restaurant reviewer, author, columnist, you name it, he does it. Bob Garner, how are you, sir?
Excellent. It's a beautiful day, and I'm glad to be talking to you.
I'm glad to be talking to you. I've been wanting to, I know our schedules, we both, you work a lot of hours. I have actually a day job, believe it or not, and a lot of responsibilities, father, husband, radio guy, a lot of stuff, and so I wanted to while we had a chance, our schedules worked out perfect for today, and I wanted to have you on. I know there's a lot of people being off season. We're going to be talking about maybe some tailgating stuff, also some stuff for barbecuing people. I know having a lot of parties in the summertime, so I wanted to have you on now. And obviously, I wanted to start off for people that don't know who Bob Garner is. I wanted to talk about you do a great job on UNCTV. I wanted to start off with that, with the restaurant reviewing. And can you talk a little bit about what you do behind the scenes? And
yeah, you know, that kind of to use a sports analogy, just kind of came out of left field. I've spent most of my adult life as a sort of a journeyman broadcast reporter, covering the legislature, doing documentaries, doing general assignment reporting, working at in commercial news, and doing just a little bit of everything, plus some time in working for a large national organization dealing with aging, and kind of learning that whole aging issue, which is kind of appropriate because we have a society that's getting older, and it's important to kind of have a handle on that if you want to write about that, or from a food or any other standpoint. But anyway, I've always been just kind of a hobbyist cook and a barbecuer in the sense of cooking whole pigs and barbecue, because I married a girl who grew up on a farm and I just naturally learned to do that. But I never really thought about doing that or becoming a food writer or a food producer until after I was 50 years old, and now I've been doing it for over 20 years on UNCTV and for most of that time on a show called North Carolina Weekend, and had done several sort of barbecue and country cooking specials, traditional food specials before that. So I've done a little bit of contract freelance type work. I've done quite a bit of being an independent producer, raising my own underwriting and doing full length programming. But the point is, I never imagined any of it. And I guess the object lesson is nowhere in your life can you foresee what kind of turns your career will take, and sometimes it's just delightful and sometimes it isn't, but this has been a lot of fun.
Yes, it has. I enjoy watching you, and I know there's plenty of people listening that know who Bob Garner is, but for the people listening around the country, I wanted to, and the world, by the way, a great thing. I would have never guessed in a million years I'd be doing a podcast, and certainly I've always wanted to do a sports show, and sometimes we'll go off the beat a little bit, like today with this interview, but it's okay because we can do that. And also,
sports, like most things, always has a connection with food, as does most things in life. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's art or music or sports or just leisure or relationship building or whatever. It all comes back to food, because food is really very elemental, and it sort of brings us all together around a table to break bread.
You know, it's funny, Bob, my whole life I've grown up where we're eating one meal, and my parents would always say, what are we going to have for supper? We're eating lunch, and they say, what are we going to have for supper tonight? So the same thing now with my married life. My wife and I are saying, what are we going to eat? We're eating, and what are we going to eat tonight? So yeah. I think no matter what the occasion, we're always eating.
Boy, isn't that the truth? And I'm married to a farm girl who grew up on good food and a lot of good homegrown food and, you know, milk straight from the cow and butter that they churned themselves and vegetables that they grew in their own garden. So you got to be on your toes to keep somebody happy like that. But, you know, I've got a story about that, too, that I didn't really realize the impact at the time. But my father grew up very poor in Carteret County, North Carolina, and was the son of a sharecropper. My grandfather never even owned his own farm. He worked as a tenant farmer on shares with other people. And he and my dad had a falling out when my dad was a teenager, young and stupid, and at age 15. And the details of it aren't important, but the bottom line is that my dad got sort of kicked out of the house because he wasn't going to let his dad give him a spanking at that age for some little minor infraction. And that was the height of the Great Depression. And my dad left home at age 15 with a spare shirt and a little bindle, as the hobos used to call it. I mean, he didn't have anything and went out and kept body and soul together for 6 years. He must have been terrified. Can you imagine a 15-year-old? And there were no jobs. Everybody, there was no money. There was no food. There were people riding the rails and living in hobo jungles. I know for one point he lived in a little lean-to in the woods and worked in a sawmill. And but the point is, after 6 years, my granddad came back and they reconciled, whereas that relationship could have been wrecked forever. And my dad went on, joined the Navy as an enlisted man, became an officer and a pilot. The Navy sent him to college. He became a gentleman, but he never lost touch with his roots. And he and my grandfather were always close after that, and they always celebrated their reconciliation, even though they didn't talk about it much, with the joy of food. They would go out and pick a bushel of oysters together. I mean, pick it out. They didn't actually go out and tong the oysters. But my dad had been a fisherman and worked on a shrimp boat and so forth. My grandfather just loved every chance my dad had. He came home and spent his leave time with my granddad, and they would go out and pick a watermelon and thunk on the watermelon, or my grandmother would put a big feed on the table. When my dad was in the Navy as a sailor on board a ship, he sent almost his whole paycheck home to support his family, even though his grandfather had basically, you know, abandoned him there. But he got $21 a month and sent 15 of it home to help feed his family during the end of the Great Depression. So anyway, it was a wonderful story, and it impacted the importance of food as an element of celebration and a family to me. And it's a part of everything that I do.
You just, today, you just, definitely, what a great story, because it reminds us, I tell people almost every day how blessed we are, how grateful I am, and appreciative. And when I hear
relationships, you know, people are alienated. And it was so great, with all their faults, to see these two men love each other like that and to share food together and to share fellowship. And my dad never said an unkind word about my grandfather. He always told me, as when I was a kid, that it was his fault, even though it really wasn't. And he ended up buying my grandfather. He and his sister ended up buying and building my grandfather's and grandmother's only house that they ever owned in their life, so they could live in it when they got too old to farm until they died.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing, amazing story, but I can, I have two great parents.
But there are a million stories like that of food and fellowship. And I think people are at the heart of food. And so anything we want to talk about, it's all about loving and enjoying people.
That's right. I wanted to ask you, I know that we have tailgating coming up for all the universities. Of course, I'm my alma mater, East Carolina.
Right.
A lot of great tailgates.
And I've been to a few of those ECU tailgates. They are terrific.
I wanted to ask you about, you made a good point before we came and before we started this interview for the podcast about tailgates. And I wanted to get your thoughts on maybe some do's and don'ts. People sometimes, I know you said, I'll give you credit for it, Sometimes people put too much emphasis on trying to wow and impress people when it's really about, when you've said the word, the correct word, fellowship, right?
Yeah, and I learned from my own mistakes. I tailgated hard when my son was playing college football up in the Shenandoah Valley at Virginia. He didn't play major college football, played at JMU. And they have the championship division, whatever they call that. It used to be 1AA. But anyway, went to every home and away game and tailgated, every home and away game. But I would work so hard, particularly at home games, about trying to, you know, have the perfect thing, that as much fun as it was, I wish looking back on it, I had simplified it a little bit so I could have not had my head down in the food and the service and worrying about every little detail. It's always more important to focus on people and to be able to keep your ears open, to listen to what they're saying. I feed some seniors once a month at church now, and instead of trying to cook them a wow meal, I try to keep the meal simple so I can go sit down with them and talk to them and so forth over a meal. So if you can simplify it a little bit, and if you're going to cook a pig, for example, don't make it so, try and work a little bit ahead of time on making the pig easy to serve. I always go in and take the bones and the fat. I leave the skin, leave the pig on the skin, you know, butterflied like most people do, but I take out all the bones and the fat and sort of pull it and season it and sauce it so that they can take tongs. If they want chopped barbecue, I have one end that's kind of chopped. If they want pulled pork, to make it easy, and then I put the ribs over to the side so they can grab a rib, even though most of the meat on a on a whole pig rib is gone, you know, because it's mixed in with the pulled pork. But that sort of thing, you know, just make it easy, make it fun, make everything convenient for them, but don't try to wow them with something new. Get it so that you can concentrate on each other.
You mentioned James Madison. They played East Carolina and beat us last year, 34-14. I want to give a shout-out to their staff. Mike Houston's a great coach. Love him. And they won the national championship game 2 years ago in FCS, and then they were in the title game and lost this past year for 2017. They have East Carolina connections, by the way, Bob. They have several coaches that have Donnie Kilpatrick, that was a great coach here, and obviously Steve Shankweller for the offensive line, and also
program has come a long way since Nelson played there. My son Nelson is now a high school athletic director, but he was a punter and place kicker and did quite well, and had some NFL tryouts, and actually kicked a field goal in Giant Stadium against Bill Parcell. He's 1-for-1 in his NFL because they let him kick during an exhibition game when he was backing up Matt Stover, who was a Pro Bowler, but with the Ravens. So anyway, that's a story. And he still coaches and private coaches in the Charlotte area with punting and place kicking. But anyway, he had a great time, and we played a lot up in New England and at that time in the Yankee Conference, and played a lot of schools up in the New England, Boston area. And it was just great to be a part of that. But we always tailgated, even if we had to go out and buy the stuff on the road. And we used to play Villanova, for example, in Pennsylvania. And then most of our other games were up further north, but always had great tailgates.
I'll tell you what, folks, there's a lot of great, that's one of the things about college and pro football that there are a lot of people I remember seeing in different towns across the way, especially up in like Green Bay, some of the places that are up north. Speaking of up north, they're getting out there way early when it's Minnesota, for example, for the Vikings. It's so cold and they're getting out there, and I'm like, you know, I'm crazy. My wife and mother will tell you I'm crazy when it comes to sports and being cold and be out there, but that is unbelievable, the temperatures they're getting out to tailgate in.
Yeah, the other is true too. We played McNeese State down in Lake Charles, Louisiana, near the Texas-Louisiana border, West Louisiana, and so that's Cajun country. And boy, you just haven't been to a tailgate until you've been to a Cajun tailgate. You'll go in, and they always welcomed us. Everybody always welcomed other team members, and that's been true at East Carolina too. I was a student and a cheerleader at Carolina, so I know that there's a lot of bad blood there. But every tailgate I ever went to from East Carolina, they always welcomed us in our colors and so forth, and always treated us so hospitably. And they did down at McNeese State too. That's a pretty good program. But boy, they cooked duck and alligator and gumbos. Oh my gosh, the gumbos and you know, the little things like that. But again, it was just the welcoming spirit that stuck in my mind even more than the food I fell in love with.
Well, that was one of my questions. You must have read my mind. I was going to ask you, what's some of the, I guess, not crazy, but the curious of the things that you've had tailgating. So I guess that trip to McNeese State would be right up there.
Well, that sort of started my love affair with Cajun food, and then later a really nice visit to New Orleans. And I've got a long-time college fraternity brother from Metairie, which is in the New Orleans area, and lives over on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain over the causeway there now. But anyway, I found out where to order sauces and where to get things online, and I make a mean gumbo, and I take it to game dinners here in North Carolina, even though that's not a North Carolina dish. I'll make a sausage and chicken, or a sausage and chicken and seafood gumbo, and I get raves for that. But that's the only thing I'm really that good at. I just enjoy it, but they seem to like my gumbo. Okay.
Well, you're killing me because I'm on a diet right now. I don't know how, if that's good or bad for gumbo.
Well, gumbo's not, you know, gumbo's not too bad. I mean, it's basically lean. It's got a lot of okra and it's got chicken and lean meat in there, and it's got some, you know, when you make the roux, that's got some gravy. That's what gravy is all about, but it's not too bad.
Well, while we're recording this, I actually have lost anywhere between 4 to maybe 6, maybe even 8 pounds. It's amazing how, yeah, you know how you go to the doctor's office and hospital, when you go there and their scales are like, it's 4 pounds difference between the home scale and there. So
if you're only 4 pounds difference, then you're living the life of Riley. Mine now tends to weigh about 10 or 11 pounds difference. But as long as you know how to factor that in, you're okay.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you're an expert, and I tell you, folks, I want to get a little bit off subject, not off subject, but what we were talking about earlier, but you being a barbecue expert, being in the, a lot of people talk about Pitt County and they talk about different places. I wanted to plug you've got books out that I love very much, and I can't remember the titles off of the top of my head, so please help me, but I want folks to go out and buy them or wherever they can get them, because you've been around North Carolina.
Yeah, all right. My books have all been published here in North Carolina, and they've been published around, they've been bought around the world, but only in small quantity, you know, onesies and twosies. I've got people who read my books in the Midwest or out on the West Coast, and I've even got a review in the New York Times for my first book. But I wrote a book called North Carolina Barbecue Flavored by Time, which was really the first book about North Carolina barbecue. There were lots of articles and so forth, but I decided to write it. And since then, there have been several other books, some sort of modeled on mine and some quite different, that have come out. So I look back and say, boy, I really didn't know what I was doing when I wrote that book. But so there was that, and then there was a paperback restaurant guide called Bob Garner's Guide to North Carolina Barbecue. That was, the idea was keep it in your glove compartment so you could sort of check them off. And so we did that, and then we did Bob Garner's Book of Barbecue, which was really a way of doing a second edition of the first book, plus about 30% new material, because more people knew who I was then and had more personal questions. They didn't know me as a food guy. They knew me as just a documentary guy and a general assignment reporter when the first one came out, who had only done a few things with food. And then my last book was sort of broadened out to North Carolina traditional foods. It was called Foods That Make You Say, which is kind of a corny but signature line that I fell into sort of accidentally, and now people expect it. I can't get away. I was just kind of like a can tied to my tail. You know, they say, make that face and give that sound.
In fact, there's a YouTube video of you doing that. So.
Oh, yeah, endlessly.
Yeah, I saw that. And there's a guy that I work with who brought that up to me, and I didn't know anything about it. And he showed it to me, and I was like, I've never seen that. So, but anyway, I wanted
to. Well, since you're in broadcasting, you'll get a kick out of this story. The guy who did that, Pete Bell, who's up in New York now, very talented cameraman, but he was new and had used to having been a sort of a one man band producer and shooting all his own stuff and editing and everything, and. We got in a tremendous fight the very first shoot we ever went on, and from then on, he'd go around bad-mouthing me and saying, oh, all he does is eat on camera. What's the big deal? And he's actually the guy who kind of came around. We became really good friends, and in fact, I gave him some home-cured hog jowl bacon to take up to his fiance's home up in the north to kind of win their hearts. But anyway, he's the one who put together that video to show for the very first tourism conference in Raleigh several years ago, and it has kind of a rude name, but anyway, it is funny, although you certainly see Bob Garner at lots of different weights in that.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, while we have a chance too, about speaking of restaurants, are there any restaurants recently you've been to, or the people I know that are listening, they're across North Carolina or different places. Are there places that we would be interested in?
Oh, sure, there are a lot. And, of course, you know, I kind of skipped over where you were headed with the last question, which was about Pitt County being, you know, one of the destination areas in the whole country, not just in the state, for good barbecue. My goodness, the Skylight Inn over in Aiden is world famous. And now Sam Jones, the grandson of the founder, Pete Jones, is running Sam Jones Barbecue, which is outstanding. And I'm a big friend of Bum and Shirley and Larry Dennis at Bum's in Aiden, right on Main Street. And they have the same ancestors as Pete Jones, who ran the Skylight. And so they cook whole pigs the same way over nothing but wood out back in the cookhouse, and lots of smoke and lots of coals and no shortcuts. And then Bee's is famous for not only for its barbecue and for its chicken. So Parker's, my goodness, I mean, what a community-minded organization that is. They're all the time. I mean, Billy Parker is one of the finest people I know, and they're all the time doing things for the community and for their employees. They're just wonderful, community-minded people. And, you know, their barbecue is sort of middle of the road. It's certainly very good, but it's not what I'd call 100-mile barbecue. But, you know, I give them props for just community support. And then you got these places around that are open on Saturday, like Jack Cobb and Son in Farmville, or you've got Morris or over in Hookerton, Morris Barbecue, that's only open on Saturday. That's a great family tradition. There are others. They're in the neighborhood. If you go down to Duplin County to Beulahville and go to Sid's Catering, which is a restaurant hidden behind his house in his backyard, and people eat barbecue for breakfast and brunch. But there's all kinds. I mean, you never know when you're going to find a great restaurant. I found a great Jamaican restaurant a few weeks ago that had 118,000 Facebook hits, whereas, you know, it didn't get nearly that many on UNCTV the night it aired, which just goes to show you that appointment television is changing. People don't even set their DVRs or sit down to watch a program. They watch it when they want to, or they watch it on their devices and that sort of thing. And so, but anyway, I found lots of places and people that pouring their hearts into these places and work so hard. And then to see somebody like that make it, not because they're a big deal, but because of dint of their hard work, that's the most rewarding part of the job for me. And it's just exactly like sports. You work hard, you put in the training, you pay the price, you suffer, you go through some agony, you go through a lot of discouragement, and if you're lucky, and you make a connection with people, and you love people, then generally, those are the people that stick around and who make it.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, I've already told you off air, but I wanted you to, and folks, if you get a chance, in my hometown, there's a new restaurant open. It's called Georgia Dean's, and no relation to Paula.
Williamson, North Carolina, isn't it?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And they had a quick story on that restaurant. It was a florist, and the lady, I knew the lady very well. Her name was Georgia Dean, and she owned a florist right near the Roanoke Country Club in Williamston off of Highway 17. And for many years, for a number of years recently, it's just sat there. And very sad, she and her husband have passed on, and which is obviously sad. And it just sat there, so it's kind of sad. And I just, if anybody knows me, they know that I can't stand to see buildings just sitting there with nothing in them as far as businesses are concerned. And recently there's a young couple, Stephanie, I believe her last name is Manning. She opened up the restaurant. They've redone it. The food is very good. Of course, they're opening up, and just like you talked about, they're going to have, even under good circumstances, they're going to have kinks to work out. But I hope if you get a chance, you, Bob, and other folks will check it out. It's really good. In fact, they've had the best fried green tomatoes I've ever had.
Wow, and that's saying something. I'm a lover of fried green tomatoes, and I was associated with the Pit for a while in Raleigh and Durham, and they had great fried green tomatoes, and of course Paula Dean helped put those on the map through mm-hmm. And Fanny Flagg, who wrote Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe.
That's where
which is also has a great anecdote in there about barbecue too, because you said well, anyway, I won't give away the story. Read Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe for a different take on barbecue.
Yeah, exactly. But I wanted to mention that because it's a great place, and I want people to come to. It's amazing, Bob. We have 50, I want to say, I'm not the Mr. Chamber of Commerce, but I believe we have over 5,700 people here in my town, and to have the number of restaurants we have, I think, is impressive considering.
Yeah, it really is. And with the Sunnyside Oyster Bar being the anchor, yeah. You know, which has been there for, 50 years. And now with farm-raised, cultivated oysters, farm-raised is really kind of a misnomer. But you got that, and then you got Vivian and Ben Howard's place. It's Vivian Howard's place right across the street from. And so you know, the Boiler Room, I was just down there eating a couple of days ago, and with cultivated oysters, which are cultivated in North Carolina's wild waters, it just changes the whole oyster picture. It's no longer just the cold weather months and the months with R in them. It's nice, meaty, consistent-sized oysters year-round. Delightful.
Who would have ever thought that growing up that we would have oysters year-round? I would have never thought that. I wanted
And we've got them in Core Sound being cultivated. We've all those creeks and tributaries feeding into Core Sound. We've got Pamlico Sound oysters. We've got cultivated oysters down in the areas north of Wilmington there between Topsail Island and Wilmington. Of course, Virginia has a mushrooming industry. They kind of got out and got ahead of us in that, but North Carolina is still coming back, but that's because the infrastructure to do that and to make a name for themselves, they got ahead of us in Virginia, I'm sad to say. But North Carolina waters are considered some of the best waters anywhere for cultivating oysters, so we have a bright future there.
You know, anytime I talk to you, even if it's for 2 minutes or an hour or whatever, I always learn so much. Bob and I, by the way, we had a great time. The very first time I met Bob was on a great show we had in Raleigh, WPTF, the great AM station, 680 WPTF, Dining Out with Greg Cox. So Greg is a friend of mine from the News Observer, the restaurant critic, and That's where I got a chance to meet Bob, and you've always been so good to me. I wanted to ask you about, as far as people that are right now, can you give us some tips, people that are listening right now? For there's a lot of people I'm hearing. I get invited to so many different backyard, if they're barbecues, it might be simply just something grilling, or it could be people actually cooking. Maybe they're having a wedding reception, or they're actually having a picnic, and are there things to do's and don'ts for that?
Yeah, number one, sort of size it to, the way I do that is if I'm, I do a lot of charity stuff where I'll you know, put in a silent auction thing to do a barbecue meal for 25 people with their choice of menu, and I sort of help direct that, and I go do it and take pictures with people, sign books, just, you know, put on a fairly simple but really good meal, and do a little speaking, and, you know, just have fun with people. So you there again, you don't want to have it all be about wowing them with food. You want to keep the food excellent if you can. But anyway, I don't always cook a pig. If they're expecting chopped barbecue, I can do Boston butts in a smaller cooker. I can do a whole pig if they want that on a pig cooker. But, you know, around here, people have seen pigs. It's not, if you go in certain other areas of the state to do a pig picking, they're used to shoulders, you know, and so they kind of like that idea. So I sort of play that by ear. But keep it simple. And keep the menu simple. I keep it to basically slaw and beans and cornbread and banana pudding or cobbler and barbecue. It's not an expensive meal to do, but it's great fun. And there again, don't get all wrapped up in entertaining. People don't entertain nowadays because they don't think they've got a good enough house and somebody else has a better house, or somebody else's house is better suited for entertaining. People build these McMansions and have, you know, great entertaining facilities. And do they entertain? No, they don't. You know, whereas people who live in simple houses with unsuitable kitchens probably turn out more food. So I would rather have a simple barbecue in a very modest backyard and say, come share our imperfect life and our less than perfect surroundings, and let's really get to know one another and do that. And so that I'm not scared off by, you know, trying to compete with other people. Believe me, if people think they have a nicer house than you, and if they think that they're slightly better housekeepers than you are, they will like you better. Whereas think about it the other way. If you're a little bit better than they are, they may enjoy it. But there's always a little seed back there that either they're intimidated or maybe even they resent you a little bit for, you know, just be open, be transparent, be who you are, be entertained within your own economic circumstances. And my goodness, I've been a journalist all my life and worked for UNCTV. People know I don't have any money.
but
I try not to keep it. Even though I'm sort of a perfectionist, I'm always fighting against that, you know, and trying to shed that and say, get rid of that. Just enjoy people and keep your eyes on people, and that usually solves everything.
I think you were talking about with me when you said the imperfect house, or that my wife, Kirsten, but we have a beautiful house from 1935, and I always make the joke, the great thing about our house is from 1935, and the bad thing about our house is from 1935.
Yeah, well, I've lived in one even a little older than that, and my wife grew up in one considerably older than that. And we lived in Burlington and basically raised our family in Alamance County for over 25 years. We used to do our pig pickings for the neighborhood. We lived in kind of a historic neighborhood in the front yard rather than the backyard, because it was more accessible. We had sidewalks, and people would line up on the sidewalk, and they would come from up and down the street, and they could see the smoke, and it was a lot more festive atmosphere to be in your front yard, where people used to sit out in lawn chairs long ago or on their front porches, rather than being off in some deck or some perfect little patio with the perfect little barbecue, perfect big barbecue set up. Well, how many people have that? you know, do something that people can do that ordinary people relate to.
That's a good point. I'll definitely play this part of the interview so my wife can, Kirsten, she'll probably kill me. I'm the outgoing person, and she is more the shy person. She's very friendly, but definitely more of the shy person. She's not a broadcaster. I have the roots of being community theater and radio, but she lets me do that. But certainly, I've got my work cut out for me. We've got a fancy house.
My biggest job is keeping my own mouth shut and my ears open and my eyes open and really listening and truly listening to what other people's stories. And if you do that, they'll think you're a great conversationist and they'll think you're a great host. And they won't even remember your house. They'll remember the warmth of your interest in them.
You were talking about the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. You keep it simple, and that way people, less is more. I think sometimes the term keeping up with the Joneses, but sometimes you can try to outdo people, but you actually make yourself look like a fool.
I have done everything wrong and still do. I am by nature a perfectionist. I want everything to be on time and I want everything to be served hot and I want it to be easy. It's because I want it to be comfortable for my guests. But then a lot of times I'm so busy with that, I'll realize I didn't even get to talk to so-and-so because I was so busy trying to get more ice into the cooler or something, or make sure the guest bathroom was just perfect when people went in there. What a waste. I mean, everywhere. I have been fortunate enough to travel the world and see how simply people open their homes. I was in villages in Western China where they didn't even have electricity or indoor plumbing, where they were more hospitable than I had been in certain circumstances. And, you know, so it's a constant battle for me. I'm certainly no expert in simple or perfect entertaining. The reason I even talk about this is because I'm trying to change myself and keep working on that to be more so that way. And I'm getting a little better all the time, and that's about the most I can say.
I noticed that a lot of times when you were talking, you hit home with me earlier, by the way, speaking of tailgating, about this is a great lesson for me, because this time of year, I always am trying to think about what are some good ways to improve a tailgate, or is there certain kind of gadgets, or there's certain things, novelty things or whatever, flags or different things you can put up. But the bottom line is some of the best tailgates, I'll be honest with you, some of the best tailgates I've ever had is going to get chicken at Bojangles and
cheat
a little bit and
making time for every person and going and really listening and getting around and making sure that you talk to everybody who's there and look them in the eye and grasp their hand and you know, really show an interest and don't just wait for them to stop talking so you can start talking about you. Some of the greatest conversationalists that the world has ever known, as I'm constantly trying to reteach myself, have been people who hardly said anything. They were just artful listeners and people who could ask questions.
Yeah, I tell you, you've been, are there, I was going to ask you, as far as restaurants are concerned, over the years, are there some of your favorite ones that stick out in your mind that you want to share with folks? Because, you know, I love to eat. And one of the things, I was asked this question recently by the health folks. They said, how many times do you eat out a week? I'm trying really hard, Bob. I love to eat out. I'm trying really hard. My wife and I are dieting right now and trying to lose weight and trying to do better with not eating out so much. But are there any restaurants over the last 20 years or more that you stick out in your mind that people would like to go to?
You know, first of all, I am not a gourmand. I'm about as different from somebody like Greg Cox as it's possible to be. I like simple. I like affordable, where people realize that, you know, people on working man salaries deserve good food too. And there's so many high-end restaurants now that are sort of chef-driven and that sort of thing. And I was saying, we were talking about Vivian Howard. It's always fun to talk about people in our own backyard. So she has Chef and the Farmer in Kinston, and has this great new, not new anymore, but Deep Run Roots, her cookbook, and has a great TV show. But right across Gordon Street and down the alley is the Boiler Room Oyster Bar, which is totally different. It's a fun, quirky place. It's oysters. And for kids who don't like oysters, they've got all these great burgers and, you know, kind of off-the-wall things. It's very informal. I was there last night. Of course, it was, you know, spring break week, packed out at lunchtime.
Wow.
And so I was doing a little review that's going to be in the Reflector and some other papers on Wednesday, the 11th, I think it is. And but that's a fun place. And, you know, a lot of times people can't get into Chef and the Farmer, but you go right across there, and she also appreciates the value of simple and fun. So simple and fun places, and I love places that just reflect how hard that they've worked. Morris Barbecue in Hookerton, one of my favorite places. It's only, they've all got other jobs in landscaping or farming or whatever they're into, but they kept that place going because their grandfather asked them to. They open on Saturday mornings, that's in Hookerton in Greene County on Morris Barbecue Road, and they cook their pigs on gas, and you would say, oh, ho-hum. But it's just the total quality of the experience and the way they match the foods up. I'd stack their guest experience against anyone's.
Wow. I wanted to ask you, by the way, also, we were talking earlier, I didn't want to forget too to talk to you about how did the column, that's something new, right? That you've been writing. I know you're a journalist for many years, but as far as writing for, I know the Reflector is one of the papers you're writing for.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't really matter. I finally learned it doesn't really matter where you write. You write what you write, and it's either bad or it's good or somewhere in between. And it doesn't matter whether it's published in the Post or the New York Times or whether it's posted in you know, a weekly paper in Duplin County. The writing is the same, and it either stands on its feet or it doesn't. And so I'm content to write. I'm writing because I want to learn. Having been a journalist all my life, it's a totally different thing to write as a columnist with so many words that you've got to work with. And, you know, if you basically can't get across an essential message you're trying to do in 500, 600 words, you can write a tome about it, but it's still not going to be any more impactful. And so it's a good discipline for me, and that's really why I'm doing it. Certainly not for the money or because it's a great, you know, well-known, huge circulation paper, but because, number one, I know the editor, Bobby Burns, through a sports connection, through our family. He's very interested in supports competitive swimming. And as hard as he works being an editor, he works even harder, you know, to support his kids in competitive swimming. But also, just for the discipline, it gets me writing every day, and it gets me used to the idea of writing concisely and succinctly. And everything I write in that column, good, bad, or indifferent, won't be wasted. It's material to be used with other characters, maybe in a fiction setting or whatever, but it's just writing about hopefully things that relate to people, and so that's valuable to me. If you're going to write, you need to write every day, and it has me writing every day, just exploring ideas and themes and ideas that can connect with people. And I know when I've connected, and I also know when I haven't. And believe me, I've had some of both.
Well, you were talking about, you made a great point that I've thought about a lot in the last few years, and that is about success being relative. And what I mean by that is, I used to think when I was at East Carolina, right after starting my radio career, in Greenville, and I've got to move here, I got to move there, and I'm always proud of the fact that I've stayed very close to home where I can be with my family. Family is very important to me, and what's great now is I've moved back to where I grew up in my teenage years. We moved here in 1985 from Durham in the Triangle to Williamston, so we've had roots here for a long time, and we moved back here to the house I grew up in, and it's funny now because my success now is being trying to be the best husband I can be and the best father I can be. And now, instead of being David Richmond or Dave Richmond, a lot of people know me in broadcasting, I'm Alexander's father. I'm Tyler's father. I'm Mackenzie's father or
yeah,
dad. Or daddy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, writing is it's all about human experience and about relationships and about personal interaction, and that is no different. I can listen to a historian and like John Meacham, who writes, and you know, I listen to people like Richard Haass, who are, you know, people I really admire who write nonfiction or history, and there's some great writing done at very, very local levels, and there's some really schlocky writing being published very successfully at the highest levels. So you can't count on the market. I hate even the term the market. This is a TV market, or this is a publishing market.
Right.
You know, every place is a marketplace of ideas. Greenville and Pitt County, no less, and probably a lot more than a lot of other places because of the influence of a university that's sort of a university of the people that really was founded on the whole concept of serving local people.
You know, it's great,
not just
Bob.
Med school either, but right. the university itself.
Yeah, you know what's great, Bob, is you were talking about writing anywhere. I just want to get your take between the I'm middle aged now and I've got obviously got
to be middle aged again.
Well, no, I mean you're still you and Ruthie. I want to give a shout out to her. She's awesome. I get a chance to work with her almost daily,
yeah.
Which is really neat. But y'all are great people. But you know what's funny is I was going to talk about technology. Who would have ever thought that we could actually be doing a broadcast and. Where you're in Greenville, I'm in Williamston right now, and we can put this podcast up here pretty soon, and we'll be able to, people around the world will be able to hear it.
No, you're putting the podcast together. You're the techie guy. All I'm doing is holding a low-tech analog
yeah,
phone in my hand here. I'm not even on a digital phone or a smartphone, so no. I've managed to grasp enough technology to keep myself out of the weeds because I don't want to travel back and forth to UNC TV, so I edit my pieces. Of course, they're very simple pieces, but I am really a depending upon people have different opinions about what kind of a writer I am, but believe me, everybody would agree I'm a very bad editor, but I get it done. I get it done, and I tell the story, and I enjoy being around younger, more creative people who are fantastic editors. And even though I'm sort of a throwback, and I laugh about that, and I get lots of support. And I'm just about to graduate to a phase in my life where I can write the scripts and let somebody else edit it for me to save some more time, since I'm really doing more stuff than I've ever done with the column, working for my family and so forth. But I can do it, and have done that so to keep my brain from atrophying quite as quickly anyway.
I wanted to ask you, by the way, speaking of we're talking to Bob Garner, UNC TV, restaurant reviewer, author. He does columnists. He does it all. I wanted to ask you about the experience as far as putting these stories together with restaurant reviews. How long does it take for UNC TV? I know you've got to go out and shoot and Can you give people an idea behind the scenes that are fans of Bob Garner?
Yeah, people say all the time, oh, I'd love to have your job, because they picture me riding around like Charles Kroll on the road, you know, just sampling restaurants. I didn't like that at all. I go out every 4 to 5 weeks and dedicate the whole weekend to one absolute slam down, foot to the metal, three shoots, three setups, three teardowns. Transfer all the footage from the disc, whatever kind of camera we're shooting with, you know, some kind of disc to my laptop, and then driving back. And so it's a slog. Don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoy it, and I dearly love it, and I love the editing. I love the process of putting together a story, and then I tend to hack and curse, as the Smothers Brothers would say. The Smothers Brothers used to say, when I'm trying to, not literally curse, but sometimes, and when I'm trying to edit, because I'm so bad at it. But I usually am happy with the end result, and at least feel like it was fairly true to my heart, even if inelegant. And I got, people are all the time getting on me about talking with my mouth full, and I got a text from somebody this morning and said, you're the only North Carolinian, I think he meant the ones who were on TV, who can talk with your mouth full and get away with it. In the early days when I first started doing food things, I had a lady used to write in and said, if you don't get that Garner guy off the air, every time I've got this much of a pledge to you, I see him, I'm going to decrease it by $25 until he's gone.
Oh, man.
And she was upset because she was a Miss Manners who didn't want me to talk with my mouth full. And now, if people will notice, I try not to do it, and I try to have a cutaway shot of, and then come back to me, rather than sitting there waiting until I can talk. You know, you don't want to sit there and wave your hands like, wait for me, my mouth is full. You can't do that in television. But every once in a while, I just can't wait, and people forgive me for that. But that's the way people eat in a tailgate. They don't, or at least a lot of people do, and I think people forgive you that if you try to control it, realizing you're going to be less than perfect about it.
But that's what makes it perfect, is the fact that you are genuine. That's why I've always liked you. You're very approachable, very outgoing person that it's like everybody loves Bob Garner, not a TV
show.
People
who are very flawed don't have any choice.
But it's fun being around you. I think you make people feel comfortable, and it comes across. One thing I've learned in broadcasting, if you try to make something happen, you'll fail miserably. I'm speaking for myself. And when you have a situation like when you try to make it a certain way, and when you said perfectionist, I am when it comes to I try really hard with these, believe it or not, with these podcasts. And sometimes you can say, hey, I could go back there and I could do all these special effects, or I can do all this stuff. And sometimes the better, more, I don't want to say where it's not airable or anything like that, but sometimes you can get too caught up in the production part of it and take away the magic.
Absolutely. And that's particularly true today. You know, it's such a competitive environment, and everybody is trying to get somebody to watch or listen to whatever they're doing, you know, on their smartphone or on their computer or on their device of some kind, or even their smart watch. And, you know, you can kind of get caught up with that battle. All the newspapers are trying to become media companies in one sense. All the television stations and radio stations are trying to become various types of public media companies. It's all sort of becoming media. And
right.
Everybody's got the same problem, large or small, is it trying to adapt to the way people listen to and interact with media of any kind. And boy, for somebody my age, it's just like, but I don't want to sit around and say, oh, back in my day, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares, you know. they care if you have some. So, when I was still working in the Raleigh area, I would, like, MC a barbecue and bluegrass show every year there for a while, and a lot of young people would come up to me and say, "Hey, can I get a picture with you?" And I'd be kind of, you know, saying, "Oh, yeah, I've still got it." The young folks, they say, "You're my mom's favorite restaurant guy." So I was the darling of the over 80 set. And so, you know, that will keep you humble.
Oh, my. Yeah, when you were talking about all the various forms, if you don't adapt with the times, especially we're finding, unfortunately, a lot of these department stores, it's very sad to see a lot of the places I grew up going to with the various stores that are now, because of the internet or different things. Yeah. It is what it is, whether I like it or not. It is what it is. And so if you don't change with the times, if you have this old business model, I call it being fat, dumb, and happy. If you stay that way, then you better look out, because people are going to leave you behind.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And yet, if you do it without some heart and soul to it, the customers will leave you behind for sure.
They will, and that's why sometimes with restaurants, they can get, speaking of fat, dumb, and happy, they don't keep up the decor. They get bad with their service or different things, and so you have to be careful with that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I had a very wise restaurateur who said, it is all about customer experience. This guy would give somebody a $500 gift card and say, "We are so sorry you had..." He wouldn't just say, "Oh, the meal's on us." He would do that, too. He would comp their meal in a moment. But he would give them a $500 gift card. And most restaurateurs are trying to operate on such close margins, and particularly their general managers and their house managers. The right. owner of the place knows that, oh, my goodness, you know, if you can keep people coming back, that's worth thousands of dollars in not only direct revenue, but in word of mouth. Yeah. Paula Deen called up a restaurant one time and said she was in town to sign a book, and I had done a show with her years ago, and just as grist for her particular mill when she was sort of building her reputation on the Food Network. Anyway, she was in town to do a book signing or something. She wanted to come to this particular restaurant. She said, "Can you give me a private dining room in an hour?" It was a Friday night. The restaurant was slammed. We did have a private room that would have been suitable, but it already had a group in it. Now, the owner said, "What I wanted my manager to do was to be smart enough to go in there and say, 'Hey, folks, you're not going to believe what just happened. Paula Deen just called up and wants a private dining room. Tell you what, if we can move you out here, right out in this area, and reseat you, we'll give you the night for free. We'll give you each a gift card to come back and have a meal on us, and you'll get to have dinner with Paula Deen as she comes in here. Just give us this table.'" People would have loved that. They would have talked about it. And instead he said, "Oh, man, I can do it in an hour. I can't do it right now." Well, then she got on Twitter and said, "I wanted to go to this restaurant, but..."
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah, it could definitely...
She didn't knock the restaurant. She just was kind of wistful. "I wanted to go there."
Yeah.
So it's all about customer experience. And the point is not Paula Deen's experience, but their experience. Wouldn't they have been excited to go home and say, "Man, you just can't believe who I had dinner with last night. Paula Deen came in."
Oh, man, that's great. Yeah, she, I've always loved her, and definitely when it comes to anything food.
Anybody like that, don't be so penny-pinching that you're penny-wise and pound-foolish, as my grandparents used to say. You know, the people who work for you, who work for bonuses according to control of costs, will always try to shave a little bit on quality of ingredients, or they can buy it here for less, and they're buying off the, you know, from different purveyors and restaurant food trucks and so forth. But the owner generally has a bigger picture than that, you know, and it's all Angus Barn in Raleigh, classic example of a place that's been there for 50 years and has stayed relevant, being a steakhouse in a drafty old barn, and yet customer experience in that place is unparalleled. So that's another perfect example of that.
Absolutely. Bob, I could talk to you for hours. You've been generous.
Speaking of editing.
No, that's a great thing about podcasting, my friend. We're going to Put it up there, and I know folks, believe it or not, I've got a lot of good feedback. We've done very well. I want to thank the listeners. There's been a lot of people.
It's engaging, and I hope it's been engaging. It certainly has been for me. You're very good at this, and you listen well, and you ask great questions. So I feel honored to have been asked, and it's been a pleasure to chat with you.
I wanted to, before we go, I want to give folks a chance to, where can they buy your books, and obviously tell them about UNCTV and your columns as well?
Well, they can read the column on Sundays in reflector.com, and Cook Communications is owns several other papers, daily and weekly, and the plan is to gradually get, as they sort of bring the production paradigm together for all these disparate papers, you know, so that they can put together all the food pages on one day or all the editorial pages on one day. Right now it's different at every paper. But anyway, the column will eventually be in several papers. Reflector.com, it's on Sunday, generally speaking, and every once in a while I'll do a restaurant review which appears in the Wednesday food section. But you can read it online at reflector.com, or even better, subscribe. UNCTV features that have aired are you know, on that website now too, and so that's the story on that. And I hope people will read and respond and give me feedback and tell me what they want to hear about, you know, people on social media, generally speaking, if they're pretty satisfied, they just kind of nod their head. Whereas the people who have a beef, who usually are more likely to post on social media. And
yeah,
so sometimes you get a misleading impression about, and that's true of a restaurant or anything. That, you know, a lot of times the people with an axe to grind are the ones who go on and post, whereas the people who are happy will give you a like, and or maybe not even that, and they'll tell you in person, oh, I really like that, but you won't see it online. So that's sort of the media environment we're in, too. They can buy my books at Barnes & Noble, and if they don't have any of my books, they're done through a publisher, so it's not like I have a garage full of them. They can buy them online.
That's great. Bob, you're tremendous.
At any nationally connected bookstore.
They're everywhere. Like, speaking of technology, they're everywhere.
they're all in cyberspace somewhere, I guess. And, you know, now they publish on demand and print on demand. But talking about connection, my first book was probably the worst book I did, and yet was in 7 hardcover printings. And I haven't even come close to that since. And now, granted, that was within the state of North Carolina, so it wasn't a huge print run, but the average book sells about 3,000 copies. And I did way better than that on a kind of a not all that well-done book right here in North Carolina. So that just shows you the level of interest in food and barbecue and that sort of thing in North Carolina.
Absolutely, and I hope people will buy the book and certainly read the column and watch you on UNCTV. It's Friday nights, right?
It's North Carolina Weekend comes on Thursday at 9,
okay,
and then the same show repeats on Friday at 7:30, and there's another airing Saturday morning that varies depending upon the channel. But I know there's one airing at like 8 a.m. on Saturday. So some people set their DVRs for one time, some set it for another, some people watch it live on a given night. There are all kinds of ways to watch it, and some people watch it on their smartphones. And then all the pieces go to live on YouTube. You can find anything I've ever done on YouTube on the North Carolina Weekend channel on YouTube.
And that's awesome. Hopefully wherever people can see Bob Gorner, buy books, watch him, read his columns, do that. You've been so generous for your time. I appreciate you so, so much. You're a good friend, a dear friend. Please give my best to your wife, Ruthie, and we'll have you definitely on again here in the next few months, maybe when people are getting closer, maybe to the fall, and we'll have you on again to talk about restaurants and maybe some holiday stuff as well.
Okay, I'd love to. Anytime. It's been fun.
Enjoyed spending my time with Bob Gorner, UNCTV. What a great guy. Bob and I have been friends for a number of years now, and he's such a delight. By the way, make sure you watch him on UNC-TV. For North Carolina Weekend Plus, he's also doing a great column in the Daily Reflector and the Greenville paper. Cook Communications owns several papers, and he's going to be, syndicated throughout those papers at some point. But you can go to reflector.com, and he also has a Facebook page as well that you can like. Until next time, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.